stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes, and tell me if you take my place. Under the cover of my skin,
welcome to the Inside Running Shoe Geeks, episode 5. I'm here with my co-host, Julian Spence, the owner from the running company Ballarat, and here with Tom DeCanto, podiatrist from Walker Street Podiatry in Sydney. So, how you guys been going?
Good, thanks, mate.
Ticking along.
Very good. As you guys would know, if you've been listening to the main podcast, that Julie's had a bit of time off running, nursing a niggle. And on the other side of things, Tom's been probably arguably in the shape of his life. I don't know if you've given him a follow on Strava yet, but I think we'll probably kick off with you, Tom. Ask sort of what you've been doing this last month, what shoes you've been rotating between your sessions, and don't leave much out. You've done a couple time trials as well, and worn the new Nike Spike. So give us a bit of a synopsis of how your month has gone.
Yeah. No, I have been doing a lot of running, which has been fun. Not quite as much as marathon training, but enjoying a couple of good quality sessions a week. And I think, I'm getting fit off some consistency. Surprise, surprise. So basically, I guess I'll start with the exciting stuff. I did do a 5K time trial. So Run Crew set up it was a couple of weeks ago, I think. We set up a 5K time trial at ES Marks. There's a few of us guys that were sort of getting fit. We thought we'd try and get a hit out. Benny Saint paced a few of us to hit 14:10 5K pace, which I thought it was going to be a little bit ambitious and a bit difficult, and I was probably expecting a bit of a slow fade, but I pretty much held on for 14:12. So it was like a tiny fade. It was pretty much paced perfectly for me. Nice. And then Kieran Tall kicked off and he ran 14:01. So he was pretty happy, but also bittersweet, just not being able to dip under that 14 minutes. Yep.
Did you boys wear the spikes or did you go ahead and wear?
So yep. I was about to say the exciting aspect of that for me was the morning of my Dragonflies finally arrived. So I was like, oh yeah, this is happening. So whipped them on, they felt good. So there was no point. I didn't think there was any need to sort of wear them in or anything. I thought 5K on track, but they're good to go. So they were pretty much I thought it was going to be hard to live up to the hype because I kind of had big expectations for them, but I was happy with them. I thought they sort of did the job, did what I thought they should do, which was pretty much be a faster package of the Vaporfly, stuff you can do, you know, on track, run a bit faster with lower stack, a bit more of an aggressive position. Sort of, it almost feels negative drop when you're standing on it because of how much foam there is in the forefoot. When you're running in it, it just the cushion factor negates the aggressiveness of the position. So I pulled up totally fine. So I ran like a 25 second faster than I've run on a hard track, but the spikes just were amazing.
Tom, do you feel like they're more of a shoe or more of a spike? Which is, what do they feel more like?
Still a spike. I still think spike, just because of that real sort of almost negative drop feel, aggressive feel to wanting to get you onto the forefoot, and the fact that you can actually feel the traction of the spikes. Like, because I haven't worn spikes that much on track. I've done a lot of cross country in spikes, but lately just doing track stuff in flats. And so when you actually get the spikes back on, the actual traction component feels pretty nice as well. So actually having those spikes dig into the track and it just feels different.
And how do you feel about a rear foot striker or a heavy heel striker wearing a shoe like this?
I still think there's enough back there. There's more foam in the rear foot of this spike than any other one that is probably on the market. So I still reckon it's fine for all those rear foot strikers. They'll get a bit out of that rear foot foam as well. Yeah.
You can definitely still feel a small rocker aspect to it as well, can't you? Like you, compared to a traditional spike, I found that if you're a heel toe striker, well, I found walking in them, you could feel the transition to the forefoot quite aggressive. So, but there was so much foam at the back of the heel, it makes a different noise on track as well, doesn't it? Like it doesn't sound like a traditional spike.
I didn't notice it. I think I was just breathing too heavy. But yeah, I'll take your word for that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's good.
Yeah, Benny had his on. He's had his for months. We sort of compared them. His prototype. It's pretty much the same midsole, just with a different upper.
Yeah. Did Kieran wear that as well? Or
yeah, Kieran had a pair as well. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
I saw Gary. So Tom trains with Gary Howard. Their group had a fair few dragonflies arrive like this month as well. So I'm sure everyone's pretty excited to put them on.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of a lot of excitement around it for sure.
One of the tricky things with this shoe is that it's like a Vaporfly. It's very limited in and if you've missed this first drop, then there's not going to be a lot of opportunity to get on board. Yeah, it's one of those ones that
do you not have another drop coming?
We have other drops coming, yeah, but probably not in the volume that we had for this drop. I can't tell you when or anything, but it will be sort of and no one can really say when anything's happening at the moment, but it's one of those spikes that if you're a track runner, you need to get onto it as soon as you see it. It's not like a rival or something from Nike that might be around all year that you'll find in lots of stores or even the Matumbos. Like in the end, they started to get pretty rare, but it wasn't exclusive or anything. It's a shoe that I think should be in nearly every distance runner's cupboard.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's it. But you ran a 5K time trial like the previous month in a pair of like really low profile Reebok Pros. Like, I mean, there's not much midsole to them either. So do you find you pull up just as good in the Dragonfly as you did in the Pros?
Pulled up better in Dragonflies. Those Reebok, Runfast Pros, they just felt more aggressive. They just felt a little bit less stack, and just like I pulled up that from that with a bit of a sore foot, just muscular soreness. But like I said, literally pulled up without any muscular soreness at all with the Dragonfly. So yeah, it felt even though that was the Reebok was a flat and this was a spike, I pulled up better in Dragonfly and the spike just from the foam, I think.
Yeah. The criticism of the shoe as an unfair advantage, because this one here, I can't see it. I can't work out the argument behind it. The fact that someone would consider this shoe an unfair advantage because it's not excessively, like there's no crazy height to the shoe. Spikes have had plates in them forever. Like even the cheapest ones have plates in them. Yeah, like this one here frustrates me that we're sort of calling out these performances at the moment. Like I've heard a few people say, oh, Stewie's broke the 3K record, but he was wearing the shoes, you know. This is just a spike with an improved foam on it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Essentially, it's the only thing different is the improved foam. So if you look back at the history of how shoes have evolved, it's like we've always had improvements in foam. So spikes particularly, like I'm pretty sure that the first spikes were just pretty much solid leather midsole, like just hard as. And then EVAs into Adidas has had Boost in their spikes for a while, and now we just got different foam. So I mean, it's just evolution, isn't it? I mean, just new foams, they get better.
Someone's just doing it better. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said it at the start, like it still feels more like a spike than it does like a Vaporfly. The Vaporfly feels different. This, you put the spike on, it still feels more like just a really, really soft, compliant spike. And, maybe there's a small advantage to that perceptually at the end of a 5K or a 10K. But I don't think there's a huge change to it as well. I mean, I know Nike releasing their Air Victory, and they put a few pods in the forefoot there, haven't they, Julian? I don't know much about the shoe yet as well, but that looks like it's a technological change as well. But, you know, they're light, they're fast, they're stiff. But when I put them on track, they still felt more like a Spike than they did like a Vaporfly. I think people were really searching for, you know, a reason to talk about these new records being broken, probably unnecessarily, I think, related to the shoes.
Mm. Yeah. And the other point I wanted to bring up, there'd be a lot of listeners out here who would think you've broken like the cardinal rule in running, is that you wore a shoe without trying it for a race. Now, can we just go through that a little bit about whether you guys have done that before, as whether you think it's still relevant with the shoes that we have these days, to be able to pull a shoe out of the box and just continue your normal training?
Yeah, in 2020, they're not leather-bound shoes anymore, which need time to wear in. Like, you pull a shoe out of the box and you are into your easy run, you're into your long run, you're into your fast session instantly. The risk is low. I mean, if the geometry of the shoe doesn't match your foot, there's a risk of blistering, but that's not the shoe's fault. That's the combination of your foot shape plus the shoe. So the 90% the shoes are, 90% of the time the shoes are, you know, they're well-formed enough, mesh on the upper is so adaptable, and the midsoles, you know, they're so fast and so fun from the start that they arguably don't cause any complications with them. So if anything, you put a shoe on that makes you feel run faster, you go ahead and you, placebo-wise, go ahead and run faster. That's probably the only risk attached to it. Like, there's no reason why you can't grab a shoe. I mean, the Gold Coast Marathon last year, I remember Millie Clark, she never worn a super shoe before, and we were running with her the day before, and her next percent arrived, I believe, the day before or maybe 2 days before, but she hadn't put them on. She put them on for like a 3K jog or 4K jog the day before and then ran the Gold Coast Marathon in them and had no issues. You know, she hadn't, you know, taken time to wear them in. These shoes don't need that. You know, you can put them on and instantly you're enjoying your run more, and there's just low risk attached to it. Yeah.
There's definitely a difference, though, trying a shoe on in a store and being confident that it is the right shape for you, and then having a shoe come through online when you haven't even put your foot in it yet, because that's when we sort of, like, there's a big chance the shoes might not fit properly, and that's the issues that we're talking about. However, if you go into a running store, then you get a chance to feel those potential niggles before you actually leave the store with them. So as like a store sort of philosophy, there is no real breaking in of a shoe. If a shoe should fit well from the start, you shouldn't have to feel like you need to break a shoe in. It's probably not the right shoe for you if that's how you feel like it. And also maybe just being aware of big transitions in terms of the support level of a shoe. So if you've always been running in like a Hoka or something, and then you put on a minimal shoe, maybe something like a Saucony Kinvara, then there will be this new load. And so that's the other thing, is just be careful of when you're changing like categories of shoes as well.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
What have you been jogging in, Tommy?
So you'd love to hear still some Reebok. enjoying those. But probably the main thing, the thing I wanted to sort of mention, same shoe that Nitta you've been running in, is the new Kayano Light from ASICS. So it's kind of a bit like what they did with the Nimbus. So they brought out quite a few months ago now, they brought out this model called the Nimbus Light. So they're kind of redoing their base models with sort of a partner model that's kind of doing its thing, but a little bit differently. So essentially trying to do it with less more modern ways, I guess. So like the Nimbus Light was a bit more flexible and softer than the traditional Nimbus, which is they're quite different. And then the Kayano Light is sort of now, it's still, so for those listeners, I'm sure plenty of listeners know have heard of the Kayano if they've not run in the Kayano. So the Kayano is pretty much ASICS staple stability shoe. Stability being the traditional sense is having a medial post. So medial post being a sort of a higher density section on the inner side of the shoe, and a shank as well. So they've got this plastic section that runs through from the rear foot up into the start of the forefoot. Features that have sort of traditionally been put into running shoes to to negate the effects of instability of the foot, and namely pronation. So this sort of term overpronation has been something that's been used in the industry for a while, and these models, I think from the 80s probably, that I think they first started, ASICs probably, I think they were the first ones to use medial posts, and they popped them
in there. I think Saucony did actually. I think Saucony
did.
I think so. I mean, they all happened pretty similar times, I reckon. I think suddenly when they realized running was something you could sell to the general population, you need to start putting technology in to be able to sell this against other companies as well. I'm pretty sure the mid 80s, maybe the early 80s, they started putting stability posts in the medial column. So just on that, there's a question here from Justin Curran, and he said from last month's episode, there was a lot of talk about neutral shoes. So can you sort of define the difference between that neutral and stability? Is it purely that strategically posted, like posted shoe is a stability shoe, or there are other reasons for stability?
Yeah, so this is where it just gets a bit messy. So, like, the traditional sense of stability probably is that medial post and some stiffness associated with like torsion of the shoe and flexion through the midfoot. So stability traditionally had those features to reduce the amount the foot pronates or the effects of that. And neutral, yeah, essentially the traditional sense is just basically the same density foam all the way around, and it doesn't actually have features that are designed to limit the rate or the amount that someone may pronate.
So the traditional Kayano, for example, puts the Duo Max posting in. However, the Kayano Lite doesn't do that. So is it a stability shoe or is it a neutral shoe?
Exactly. That's where we get it gets. Yeah, so I reckon in recent years, it would be like prior to this Kayano Lite, there's been a lot of neutral shoes that have stability elements. So it's not, they might not have a medial post, but it's something to do with the shoe that it makes it have more inherent stability. And so with the Kayano Lite, the way they've done it is primarily through the geometry of the midsole. So a few things basically, a big thing I guess is the contact area, the surface area. So how much shoe makes contact with the ground, and so in the Kayano Lite, it's quite oversized. So you look at the shoe and you're like, oh, that's a pretty big sort of shoe. So it flares out from the heel through the midfoot and into the forefoot. So it's kind of got an oversized print. So bigger, it'd be wider than someone's actual foot. And that in itself is a big way that, and not just this shoe, like for example, I always got to give credit, I think, for all these models that are coming out now, like the Infinity with the wide base to provide support, but Hoka have been doing it since like 2008, like that, that's how they have got shoes that are high stack with a soft foam. Yep. To be stable enough to accommodate those features of being so soft and having so much stack. So to counter that, it was almost a necessity that they had to have like an oversized platform to achieve stability in that sort of shoe. But now these other brands and this one that the Kayano's doing that, and particularly with the Kayano Lite, they're also adding in some extra stuff that you don't see in, say, the Nike Infinity, and it's a sort of an asymmetrical geometry where the medial side has a more sort of convex sort of shape. So it's like it sort of bulges out medially. There's more foam, the same density foam, but there's more foam on the medial side, whereas the lateral side, it's a bit more of like a concave sort of geometry, and there's less foam there. So in function, I guess, less foam laterally may promote a little bit more compression laterally, and there might be a little bit less compression on the medial side with more volume of foam on that side. So
but they've kept it light, haven't they? There's no plastic trussics in the system.
There's no shank.
Well.
There's no plastic. Mm. So yeah, it's all done. It's all like, it's like a slab of foam, but it's just the geometry of the foam that makes it inherently stable. So it's just doing things differently, and to be honest, I think they've done a really good job with that model.
And compared to the Nimbus Lite, which you had as well, like obviously the geometry you've mentioned, it's got more surface area, it's a much more stable shoe. That concave lateral part of the midsole existed on the Nimbus Lite, which means if you hit the outside part of the heel, it compressed rapidly. I didn't feel that as much on the counter light, but definitely noticed the foam felt relatively firmer as well. But not firm, but it just felt firmer than the Nimbus light, which obviously was a marshmallow. Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
But it responds well, doesn't it? Like, it's a relatively responsive shoe for what looks, I guess, when you hold it in your hand, it looks like a lot of shoe, but it is still light. So they've done a good job overall.
Yeah, I think it's about 60 grams lighter than the normal Kayano. So it's considerably lighter. No.
I'm still dumbfounded by the amount of people who walk in like with this misconception that is the shoe for a serious runner, the Kayano.
So I guess the question is, I mean, a Kayano Light probably sounds like, it looks like ASICS now have got shoes that are almost for the runner. You know, they've got like a separate line to those who are a bit more recreational. You know, you've got the Kayano, you've got Nimbus, you've got Cumulus on one side, and then all GT2000. Then you go to this new, I guess, 2019, 2020 shoes. They've got Nimbus Light, Kayano Light, Evo Ride, Glide Ride. And suddenly they've got almost like a division. They've got too many shoes, basically, I think. So, but they've got a lot of shoes. So, I mean, who would you suggest someone goes into a Nimbus Light compared to a Nimbus, for example, or a Kayano Light compared to a Kayano?
Yeah, a lot of. So, you would look at someone's sort of running style, I guess. Have a look at them run on a treadmill. The Nimbus Light is very soft through the back and very unstable through the back. The amount of people that we see hit the deck in that shoe and just basically get forced into this supinated position is all the way and through until sort of mid stance when they start to get a little bit more transition. It's incredible, and it's not a very safe shoe for a lot of people. So we have to really pick and choose who goes into that shoe. Lighter bodies and more midfoot strikers for us. That's sort of where we're at, or someone who's not very lateral with their foot strike, they might land a little bit more central. So they're not sort of at risk of falling off the shoe as much.
Yep.
Kayano Light will be interesting. We haven't got it in store. It drops on, releases on the 2nd of October. It does sound pretty nice.
I think it'll suit a wider audience than the Nimbus than the Nimbus Light for sure.
And it's not to say the Kayano hasn't got its wearers either. One thing with people with these brands introducing these really soft plush foam super light but not the most stable shoes is that they're not appropriate for a lot of people, and we see that like on a daily basis when we have someone who's walking as well as running. If you start walking in a lot of these really soft foams, like say the Nova Blast from ASICS, it is super unstable through the rear foot, and that's not going to suit someone who's sort of walking versus running. And even with running, we've had a few rear foot strikers in that shoe, and it almost creates like ankle sprains after 5 minutes. It's so unstable.
That's a good point. Yeah. Though, walking versus running, because people that are also walking in their running shoes, it's quite a different it's totally different biomechanics. And so these softer rear foots and probably do make a big difference depending on their purpose, what they're doing with it.
Well, the Nova Blast is a great example of a relatively high stack soft foam, but small surface area at the rear foot, isn't it? So if you got a lot of like, and if you're walking, you know, you're always hitting the outside part of your lateral heel. Like that's going to be the side of crash. I mean, that's a running shoe that's not built for walking at all. So,
and the midsole's skived away on both sides. So what happens is it creates almost like some hollowness underneath both the medial and lateral side. So when you're putting load on that top area of foam, it just collapses into the bottom area. And maybe we're getting too far down the track where the shoes are becoming too pigeonholed to certain runners.
That's it. But that's even the geometry of the foam is what makes it feel plush, you know. It's the same thing when you put the Glide Ride on, it has a, you know, that concave midsole. From the medial and the lateral side, if you hit that rear foot, it feels like it's super soft because the sides just compress into each other. So there's nowhere to go. But you just touching on stability again, so you've got surface area, which you touched on, which Hoka have been doing for a long time, and now shoes like Kayano Light are doing. Is it a better way to stabilize the foot, you reckon? Or do you think the medial post still has a place? I mean, at the end of the day, the medial post has always served a purpose to try and, you know, reduce the rate of pronation or accommodate that part of the foot. is it required anymore?
One thing that I think is if you go too wide with a shoe, it becomes clunky to run in. So I'm not sure whether the Kano Light, I don't influence shoe sales as much as you two guys, so I don't have a pair yet. But when I run in shoes that are too big and clunk, like say a Hoka, I don't enjoy my running as much because they're so big and wide and there's such a platform that they don't feel agile. So sometimes it's nice to put on a shoe that might have a post in it that's less surface area, because to me that's what I enjoy running in more. So I think you can achieve stability with still being agile in a shoe rather than having a big flat footprint, especially on trails. If you get onto some trail, maybe not like all trails, but say like areas where you don't want a massive footprint on the ground, that can sort of be an advantage to having a post on a narrower lasted shoe. Also compression of the foam, like if you, so let's say the New Balance 1080, let's take that. If the foot pronates heavily in that shoe, initially it might start, like it might guide the foot a little more and sort of look a little more stable over time, because the foot's sort of toeing off more medially and we're wearing down the medial aspect of the shoe a lot more than the lateral aspect, then the shoe starts to bias in terms of how it's wearing and it creates troughs. And all of a sudden the shoe's not really stable anymore, and that might be only after a 100K, 200K, and the foot's pronating a lot more in the shoe. So there's, with a dual density foam or a harder posted shoe, that won't happen, and the shoe will wear down maybe a little bit more evenly, and so the customer or the runner will get longer life out of that shoe.
And that makes sense. Like, you're comparing a Gel Pursuit to a GT 2000, maybe the posting plays more of a role when you get to like the 200, 300K mark of the shoe, if someone is moving that direction.
Exactly. Yeah. What we're seeing in store is someone coming in, not running. So firstly, we film them for 30 seconds, right? Their gait changes after an hour. And then we're seeing the shoe at kilometer zero. That shoe changes after kilometer 300. This is something that's difficult to do, but almost like see into the future and go, okay, what's this shoe going to be like 20K into your 30K long run? Or what's it going to be like after 300Ks of wear? And the way that we do that, we have to sort of look at someone's previous shoes. And that's where previous shoes can give us a good idea of how they wear their shoe and things to be cautious of in the next shoe that they get.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. What are you guys' thoughts on Brooks and what they've done in recent years by just pretty much getting rid of the staples and changing their staples by removing the medial posts?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Julian probably can answer this better, but when I worked in retail like over a decade ago, almost a decade and a half ago, like the Adrenaline was a shoe that was so easily sold, and it was sold sort of next to the GT 2000. Almost one for one at some stage as well. And they had that traditional medial posting that went all the way back to the rear foot. It actually tapered off. It had like a 3-density posting. It went from being like soft laterally to a little bit dense, like the rear middle, and then obviously quite dense in the medial side with a plastic sort of trussic system in the middle as well. But now they've obviously removed that and they've used guide rails. And all I can tell you is that clinically I see them less often, and I'm not sure if they're as easy to sell comparatively. So I'm not sure if Adrenaline customers went elsewhere, but you might be able to answer that, Julian.
It is a very different customer now. So I guess this is how we have looked at it. And basically the Adrenaline 19, right, that was the strong support shoe. And then when the Adrenaline 20 came into the range with removing the posting and putting guide rails in, we like assessed it on the treadmill against lots of other shoes that were in a similar category. And from sort of that frontal plane footage we take, that rear foot gait assessment, it really wasn't holding a foot like the old one used to. But what that did is it almost opened up all this new range of customers that wear neutral shoes that could start wearing the Adrenaline without any type of risk of over-support and without much consequence. So our sort of breakdown of shoes in the store, I'm going to say, is probably about like 85% neutral shoes, maybe 80% neutral shoes, 15-20% support shoes. So the customer already in an Adrenaline
18 was quite niche. Then when the 19 and 20 came out, we all of a sudden got this whole new population that we can start using this shoe with. And so our sales of that shoe increased, but it got a different customer in it.
So did those wearing a Ghost, some Ghost wearers went to Adrenaline? Or
that's right. They have. And some Adrenaline wearers, like, we discussed how this is a great opportunity to maybe step away from that high-level support shoe and transition you out of that. And because they were, like, so tied to the Adrenaline and they couldn't get it anymore, they were almost forced to. And so they thought, okay, well, let's give it a crack. Let's try a Ghost. Let's try this new Adrenaline, which, I mean, you're changing shoes there. That's not going to a new model. That's going to a whole different shoe.
So do you find that people were buying that shoe because it was Brooks, or were they buying it because it was an Adrenaline? Did you see people perhaps move from an Adrenaline, knowing that they needed that sort of Duo Max, moving to like a New Balance 860 or a GT 2000 instead, or did they stay with Brooks and try and you know divvy their way into a neutral shoe? How does that transition happen?
Well, a lot of the time it's sort of working out why they were in that Adrenaline in the first place, and they've to be honest, they've just sort of been incorrectly fitted at other stores. And they come in and they're like, yeah, I've had this. Why did you get it? Oh, they told me this was the one that was right for me. Okay, well, how have you liked it? Oh, it's been okay. Let's get you on the treadmill, have a look. Oh, you don't pronate much at all. And have a look at this shoe. It's cooked on the outside. You're busting through the meshes on the outside of the shoe. It's compressed massively, where you're now like in a full wedge situation. So how about we just strip it back, start from zero, and we go again. And talking to them about transitioning out of it, there's a difference in neutral shoes, just like you discussed before. There's a difference between a shoe like the Nova Blast, the Nimbus Light, what else can we throw in there, like the Pegasus, and then you've got shoes that are more stable, like a New Balance 880, a Brooks Ghost, an ASICS Pursue or Cumulus, where they're still quite stable shoes, they just don't have that posting. So it's about picking the neutral shoe that you transition into, or if it's something that they really need, like they've got sort of a history of maybe tib post injuries, where we put them in another support shoe because they've found that it's helped them with their niggles. So that's the shoe. Like for a while it was the Nike Structure, because that was one of the strongest shoes that used to compete with the Adrenaline 18. And that won't be like that going forward. But the New Balance 860 is fantastic shoe at the moment.
That's a really good outline. Tommy, just going back to your training month, for example, you did a session recently on Strava where you ran 3x3K and they just progressively got quicker. You were finishing like in about 8:35 for your last rep or whatever, 8:38. What shoes were you wearing for that? That's a super fast session. What were the super fast shoes?
Yeah, so I was back in Next Percents for that one. So we've been doing a lot of sessions at Centennial on this cross country course that Benny and Gary have set out. So
you ran 8:38 on a cross country course.
No. I'm going to get to that. No. We've been doing a lot on the cross country course, and I've been using spikes a lot. So I've been in the Zoom Victory cross country spikes. Yep. And I haven't worn Next Percents for ages. But this session last Saturday, we're back on the white fence, so it's more of like a groomed a hard packed dirt trail. Not groomed, I mean it's pretty rough, but it's a harder packed surface, and there's no sharp turns like the cross country. So I thought good opportunity whip the Next Percents back on, and it was quite interesting. Not having worn them for a while and doing a lot sort of in traditional flat sessions midweek in flats and the cross country spikes. I really noticed the benefit again. I sort of almost forgot how much it sort of feels like it's just helping you to propel. So I felt bloody good in them. They just felt great. So yeah, it the shoes I think certainly help to some extent with maintaining that pace over that distance. Mm. So yeah, happy with the session. Enjoyed getting back into the Next Percents.
And then it's a relevant list of question through here as well, talking about training on grass or training on normal, comparing the Pegasus to the Pegasus Trail, and sort of like when you're on those, when it's getting wet on those grass surfaces during the winter, for example, is there any like benefit to wearing, say, a peg trail or anything that has more grip on the outsole compared to wearing a traditional peg? I mean, I feel that the outsole for the Pegasus is pretty good as well. And I know the peg trail is a bit more industrial with the lugs, but would you recommend if you're doing sessions on those cross-country trails, you've been wearing spikes a lot. I know you've been preparing for the track, but is there any benefit for just wearing more trail shoes, or do you feel there's not a huge benefit to that?
I'd say the main factor would be how wet the surface is and how muddy, primarily how muddy the surface is. So if you've got patches of mud, then yeah, you're going to probably really benefit from getting the deeper lugs to get better traction, particularly if there's some tight turns around some sort of wet areas. But apart from that, if it's not sort of wet on grass, I reckon you're fine in a road shoe. What do you reckon, Julian?
Yeah, so trail shoes for us are pretty specific, I reckon. And there's no one's really done a hybrid well yet. The hybrids always seem to sort of feel too slappy and too firm on road. And when you get, maybe they can handle trail a little better, but they're just, the difference, I guess, is the firmer foams and the outer soles are a lot harder, and that does create slappiness. And the shoes get a lot heavier too. So it's a fairly big compromise to go to a trail shoe. You lose a lot of benefit, I think, that you get from a road shoe. So I think if you're running like the white, I've never run there, but it sounds pretty nice. I don't think you'll find many trail runners on that thing, or trail shoes on that.
No.
The way that, like, if a customer comes in and we start talking road or trail, I ask how many days a week they're on the trail. If it's sort of more than 50% of the time, I'd sort of suggest they should have a trail shoe and a road shoe. If it's like 90% they're on trails, they probably should just have a trail shoe. And then if it's like less than 50%, and the trails aren't too aggressive, they could probably get away with road shoes. That's how we sort of break it up. Fair. But, I mean, running in somewhere like the Grampians or for us around Lüderberg Forest, for you guys probably the Blue Mountains, like on the single track. Do you even have trails in South Australia? I'm not sure.
Yeah, we've got the Heisen Trail, like ours. We've got the whole Heisen Trail that goes from Flinders Ranges to the south. We've got some good trails.
Pretty aggressive.
they're definitely not like they're not Blue Mountains. They're not like Grampians or anything like that as well. But our highest point's, I think, 711 meters.
No mountains.
Hills, but no mountains.
Yeah. It depends. Technical trails that demand a more technical shoe. But if you're just out there on fire roads, that could be fine. In your road shoe, yeah.
And Tommy, you mentioned you're training in spikes a lot, more traditional shoes. Is that to prepare for the track now, or you just like wearing sort of spikes this time of year, or is this specifically like preparing for the track? And what spike are you wearing when you're doing training sessions?
It's a combination of things, but probably primarily, preparing for doing some track stuff. It's almost like a bit of a graded progression and strength program for my Achilles. Probably people have heard me talk about my Achilles. I've got a history of Achilles issues, and a way of me just trying to get them more resilient is just being really careful with gradual transition to a little bit less, and so it can actually get a little bit stronger. But with the transition, and I've done that with footwear and reducing the height of the lifts, because essentially it's a bit of a mismatch between protection from injury and performance. So for me, if I want to probably get a little bit more performance, I actually want my Achilles. I mean, the Achilles is the biggest tendon in the body. It's going to store the most elastic energy. I want to use it as best as it can. So I want to be able to develop that elastic system of the tendon. So my goal is to try and weigh the pros and cons of injury risk versus improving elastic storage and energy storage of that tendon. So I've pretty much just gradually been loading it with primarily with footwear, and slowly building into some volume of faster sessions.
Is it in Matumbos, or are you wearing cross-country spikes, or
for For no, pretty much just cross country spike. So the Victory cross country, yep. Which I've worn those Victory cross country a couple of iterations of them, and I reckon the latest ones are really good. They're not good for people. Like if anyone has a really high instep, like a high volume sort of foot, they're going to really struggle getting into that spike because it's like a booty construction. There's no tongue, like, and just even when the laces are fully loosened off, it is a struggle to get my foot in there, get it in. And once it's in, it's great. Like you're completely locked down. So, and that's the point of it, I guess. Like when you're taking a hard turn on a cross country course, if the shoe and the foot are one, it's just like, there's no movement. It's great.
So there's no volume in the upper at all, is there? So it's just
No. Yep. If you've got a high instep, if you've got a really high arch, you're probably going to struggle. Like I've had Kieran Tall, he got his normal size and I think he had to size up because he couldn't get his foot into it. His normal size, just from a volume perspective, not a length perspective, like just the depth of it.
Nice. And do you stock them, Julian?
The Victory.
Yeah. The Victory, cross country.
No, they've never brought that into Australia. I don't know where Tom's buying them, but they're not in Australia, that's for sure.
That's a source.
Yeah. Saucony brought a cross-country spike in once. No, it wasn't even a spike. It was just a cross-country shoe. Got it. What shoes have you been wearing, Nitta?
I don't want to – we double up a fair bit on this. We obviously all wear similar shoes.
Pick something new then. Pick something fun.
Well, actually, I've definitely been wearing, like, since probably the last week or so, it's been good that we've delayed this podcast by a week because I've been able to wear the new Balance Fuel Cell RC Elite.
Oh, yeah.
And that's been, like, I've been enjoying the Endorphin Pros for a lot of the sessions I've been doing as well. But I would say this shoe has, it's definitely different to the Pros. Obviously, in that super shoe category, the rock is less aggressive. The foam's arguably softer. It's extremely lightweight, and I've done a road session, a grass session, and a track session on it. It's I think you have to generate your own pace a touch more because there's no rocky in how you wear the next percent or the Pros. And once you're up to those sub-maximal speeds, it feels like the rock is almost sort of, you know, helping you along. It's just a bit more more useful once you're up and rolling. This shoe, you sort of feel like you have to generate your own pace a touch more consistently. So when I did short reps in it, so 2s and 4s and 1Ks on the track, the outsole is fantastic. It grips so well on the rubber that it feels like a higher performance shoe for the shorter repetitions. So it's been a shoe that I've enjoyed for training probably more than any other shoe in relation to running, you know, reps from 30 seconds to 3 to 4 minutes. So I pull up good the next day, but you definitely don't feel like, like it's assisting your pace, sub-maximal paces. So, it weighs 210 grams, I think, for size 10. The stack height's quite... it's probably closer to 32, 33 mils at the rear foot. And the outsole, I don't know if anyone had worn or seen the 5280s. That was the New Balance performance shoe built for the mile and road. It's arguably the same outsole. And that outsole, I think, is the best of the three in terms of gripping. Like the Pro definitely struggles in the wet. And the next percent's a good outsole as well. But I found this shoe to be really good for training. I don't know if I'd race in it in a marathon over the next percent or the Pro, but I'd probably run a 5K in this on the track, although you can't now and, get an X next to your name because it's a too high stack. But that shoe's been a really good performance shoe. I'm not sure if you've sold many of them yet, but it's a bit different, bit different to the other super shoes, but I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, all these super shoes sell out immediately now. The hype around them and the limited quantities, they sell out straight away. And the Racer Elite, I did one jog in them actually. My first run back after realistically, it was about 4 to 5 weeks of not much running at all. I had 20 minutes and I went out and ran in the Racer Elite or the RC Elite. And it was so soft and I just did. I actually, jogging in it's not the best idea, that's for sure.
Nah.
I love the grip. The grip was just astounded me how good it was compared to other shoes. That's definitely the key, I think, or like the big benefit. And you notice it against the Pro, which is very slippery.
I don't know why more shoes don't do that outsole. It's been around for years. I had an ASIC. I remember having an ASIC shoe.
A DS Trainer.
Yeah, a DS Trainer had them. Yeah. It's just such a, it shaves weight and it adds like insane grip. So I don't know why more, it's, I think it's an expense thing. I think it's expensive than
probably,
to add it to
yeah.
the shoe.
Yeah. It actually feels softer with that grip because each little lug compresses slightly. Yeah. So when you have like that TC, like from New Balance, full length sort of rubber, that can feel a little slappy. You don't get a lot of give to that. Whereas, yeah, each lug sort of gives and you think, oh, this is like, this is a bit softer than what it really is.
And that's spot on because, like, the TC has similar foam. I think it's slightly higher durometer, but it feels much firmer because the outsole is more like a stunk, you know, like a chunk of steak on the outsole, whereas this has really good compliance because, yeah, like you said, each individual lug can comply. So, yeah, but it's a good shoe. One thing I'll notice is on the track, you know how, like, New Balance have just gravitated, like, since the Rebel, they've gravitated to using, like, a bit of a lateral flare where the outsole sort of flares outwards a bit. On the left foot going, you know, traditional counterclockwise around the bend, I noticed that lateral flare a bit more so. So I can imagine when Ellie's been wearing this for marathon, having lateral foot issues, putting a bit of a medial support in probably actually just evens up the load a little bit. So that's probably what I perceptually feel I could probably do in that shoe and use it as a longer marathon shoe, I reckon, and find it a touch more comfortable.
Well, just on that, that's a great point because I pronate a lot. And when this lateral, when I'm running in this shoe with very soft foam on a racing type last and you add a lateral flare, my foot just like my ankle nearly touches the ground. That's how much it really encourages the foot to pronate more. And I don't need that because I have plantar fasciitis issues at the moment. And when I pronate excessively at the moment, it doesn't help that niggle. For me, this thing goes on when my foot gets better.
Do you know, I don't notice it as much on the RC as I do on the TC. I think that denser outsole on the TC makes it happen a bit more rapidly, whereas I think just the outsole is a bit midsole is a bit softer in the RC, so it complies a bit better. I don't even notice that lateral flare on the Rebel, and because the Rebel was such a low stack shoe, I think the lateral flare was pretty insignificant. But now we're stacked up a bit higher, you notice that lateral flare a touch more.
Yeah, and the foam's softer. The foam's softer too, so more movement underfoot.
Definitely. Yeah. But the other Mylan shoes, like I'll touch on this one briefly. I've started using the Glide Ride again. So after track sessions when my calves are pretty toast, although they haven't been as toast because I've been wearing super shoes. But I've done a couple of sessions in the Dragonfly. I find it super responsive shoe, like running repetitions of 200. I'd run 800 in this shoe now, all the way through to a 5K comfortably. I probably still think it feels like a traditional spike. I'd personally battle with it for 10K, but I don't have the calf strength or the capacity you guys do. So I would probably still prefer to wear a traditional super shoe in the 10K. So I haven't solved that puzzle yet.
You're out there 10 minutes longer than us anyway.
But I've actually got a mile. I tried, Tommy, I got a bit of flack for interrupting Tommy when he was talking about his Reeboks last episode. I've gone
as you
a
should,
Reebok
mate.
Shoot. As I should, yeah. I've got a Reebok shoe, but the one with a bit more of a mileage shoe called the Reebok Float Rides and Metros. And so it's like they're, but it's funny, it's not that high a stack still. Like it's, you know, the Reebok midsole is a TPU, so it's very similar to the Boost midsole. But we were just talking about the surface area idea. I've become very accustomed to wearing the Infinity and been wearing, Glide Rides and shoes that have a wide surface area. This is a much narrower in the forefoot, like up to about a centimetre and a half, like less surface area from side to side from an Infinity. So I found them a little bit less stable because the foam is pretty compliant. Now, I think the foam's magic in the Reebok, but I think the geometry of the shoe on the upper is a little bit, it doesn't feel as, I definitely wouldn't wear over top of an Infinity or say a Pegasus 37 at the moment. So I think they've got the foam right, but I think the upper of the shoe is probably a little bit compliant. But I'm sure you're still wearing yours, Tommy, I probably wear them for like a shorter run, like a 30, 40 minute run, as opposed to like out towards an hour and 90 minutes. I'd traditionally go back to an Infinity or a Peg 37 or even a Nova Blast.
I get that. Yeah, the I don't have the Symmetris, but the Float Ride Energy one I've got, it feels to me one of the closest models to the Epic React. Yep. And to me, that's been yeah, fun to find something that's somewhat similar. Because I do get it, as much as I love like things like the Nova Blast, like the high stack stuff, I get a little bit over it sometimes. I just want to go back to like a traditional shoe with a bit of a normal stack and just feel, still want something soft, but you're just a little bit closer to the ground. The shoe is lighter, so it's like a light shoe. You're a bit closer to the ground, but it's got a nice soft midsole still. Yeah, but I get what you mean with stability. If it's a higher stack than the energy, then I could understand it might be feel a little bit less stable than what you're used to.
Particularly Infinity. That's right. As you mentioned, like just a higher stack shoe probably is, you know, requires more surface area to accommodate it to be more stable. So, but have you guys been using the Glide Ride still at all? Like, I mean, I know you used it for a bit there, Tommy, but post like hard running session, you just don't load your ankles or calves in that shoe. Like it's very much an offloading shoe, like a heavy rocker-soled shoe, really compliant midsole, relatively clumsy shoe, I would say, but because it's such a high rocker, it sort of, you know, moves you forward a bit easier. But I find that, you know, offloading calves, that's been a good shoe.
Quite heavy too. I got a pair actually recently, and I've been done a few runs in it, and yeah, it's very rocked, but to me it just feels a lot of shoe, and it's not quite soft enough for me either. It's still pretty firm underfoot. I think we're going to see a much better version in the second model coming up, which actually does what I think they want it to a little better. It will sit against like the Bondi and the New Balance more, and I think we're going to see some really good action with that shoe coming up.
When does that come out?
Let me tell you, I've got a list of all the shoes that are coming out.
Nice. So tell us about your month of selling shoes, Julian. Like you've had, you know, the Dragonfly, you've had the Alpha Fly, you've had some Zoom X, that's for sure.
Yeah. So the Dragonfly release was a big one. I knew it was going to be popular, but I didn't realize how big it would be that morning. There weren't a lot that came in the country. Our store was lucky enough. I took a few gambles on this shoe because I saw a prototype of it in December when I was in Oregon, when I went to the Nike HQ and we met with the footwear team and they showed us what was coming up for the Olympics. And we saw this thing and I looked at it and I thought, oh, who wouldn't want to wear this? And so when it came up available for us to order, I did take some big gambles because traditionally spikes have been a bit of a dead area for us, and you don't really do a lot of them. A lot of the spikes get handed down for little athletics and stuff, and adult runners tend to buy one spike and not very many for a few years. So this was a gamble, and it paid off for us because we had a lot of numbers, a lot of units, and it went all around the country, really. Not a lot of places you could have got it. And then we had the Alpha Fly release late August. I think, I don't know, I can't remember whether we recorded before or after that. We didn't get as many units of that, but again, super hard to get. We've still got funnily enough, we have units of that left. Size women's sizes. It's like, or men's 7, 7.5, women's 8. A half and nine. I'm like, if I was a woman, why aren't you on that? What else came out recently? What else is a new shoe?
Well, I mean, you've obviously got the RC Elite. That's literally this last week, I think. So that's
And that went well too. So that sold in a morning. Sold out in a morning. But what's interesting is ladies' racing shoes. We were having a discussion in the store yesterday. Why did we probably sell 5 men's racing shoes to 1 ladies' racing shoes. Now, when you go to a fun run or like athletics, the ladies fill the fields just as much as the men. Why don't they consider a racing shoe more as often as a man considers a racing shoe? I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, is it merely sizing the reason why you can't sell it? Like, I mean, I remember trying to get some sizes, speaking to you about some of our girls at the club trying to get sizes. They're just on the smaller end, aren't they? Like, it's...
That's racing flats. But, like, when we have gender-specific race flats come in, I mean, that's spikes. So when we have gender-specific race flats, like the Saucony Endorphin Pro, the RC Elite, what else have we had? The ASICS Meta Racer.
So I basically are ordering now five times the amount of men's shoes because our ladies' racing flats, they don't really move very well. And we get to the end of the season, we're like, huh, no one really wanted these. Yeah,
if you I reckon that all the competitive girls that I see are massively into it, and they'll want it. But maybe it's that less competitive runner, whether it's male or female. I think that the less competitive one, maybe not less competitive, but like them. I think males, depending on the level, that whatever level they're at, they just want the best, and they have a bit of an ego, and they want to whatever. Whereas females that are just doing it for fitness fun, they're not going to be so concerned with performance and yeah. beating their mate, I reckon.
Well, that was sort of the philosophy or the idea, the hypothesis we came up with, is that maybe the men, like you said, the ego sort of drives it a little bit more, like the lack of consideration as to how, like, that shoe is going to how valuable it was going to be, like, or versatile for them. They're not really considering that. Whereas we get a lady come in and they go, oh, I'm going to wear this once a week, maybe twice. Like, they consider the purchase a lot more. And because we're selling most of our race shoes to probably 3 hour to 3.5 hour marathoners. That's where most are ending up with. And so if you extrapolate that out to a lady running maybe like 320 to 350 or so, like, I don't think we're selling any of our race shoes for the ladies in that category.
Yeah, it is tough. Yeah. Like, I had a patient the other week, and she was, you know, she's a 338 marathon runner, I believe, as well. And she'd been, you know, training pretty hard, wanted to break 330 in the Adelaide Marathon. And I just said, you know, treat yourself, go buy yourself a pair of Next Percent. And she did. And she ran 329 in the Next Percent. And that was a huge milestone for her. So there's a market for them to wear it, but it's like an ego thing or a lack of, like, understanding that maybe the high performance shoe actually can help you when you're running. So maybe they don't even see the value until they've done it. So, but even at club running level, like, we don't get as many female runners, like, joining a club, for example, as well, because, you know, they have their own sort of, you know, female running groups, which are probably a bit less intimidating, less invasive. And but the girls at our club will definitely, you know, jump in. Once they're in the club, they'll jump into the culture. Like, we have our young crew, and even males and females, like, you know, rather than, you know, buying booze at the end of finishing year 12, they'll spend their money on Dragonflies, for example. And if you're a girl in the club, you'll be doing the same. But we just don't have many girls in the club. That's why we don't see it. So, yeah, I think that's probably the same in every state. Maybe not Run Crew. I see a lot of ladies running at Run Crew. That's probably a bit different, Tommy. You probably have heaps of females wearing performance shoes there.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So to me, it seems odd when you say that, Julian, because, like, Run Crew is big, lots of runners, lots of girls, and they're, for the most part, they're all, there's obviously some that aren't, but for the most part, it seems like they're really into the performance shoes like the guys are.
Yeah. So once they're embedded in the culture, the shoes come with the culture, don't they?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, I reckon that covers, like, besides that, I haven't worn anything new that you guys haven't worn, and that covered a lot. That covers three of the listener questions, and that's gone for a full, well, it's gone for over an hour now, so that's, I thought, you know, we could solve a few of the puzzles for the listener questions and talk a bit about the new running shoes, and next episode we'll get on another guest and go through something with them. So what do you guys got planned for the rest of the month? I know, Tommy, you've got another 1500 time trial. Just for the listeners through here, you're a 2:14 marathon runner. Now, there was a post that came up that said, Julian is the only person not to have broken 29:50 for 10K that has run under 2:15 for a marathon.
Australian,
that's right. And there was like 47 other people who had broken 29:50, which you're one of them. But your PB for the 1500 is 4:06. Now, Julian's
4:01, thanks, mate.
Is it 4:01? Oh, sorry, 4:01. 4:01, yep. 4:01. Now, Julian's been well under 4 minutes, so he's technically absolutely faster than you at this point in time. Will you put the Dragonflies on and have a crack at the 1500 in the next month or so?
Well, I'm going to actually try and get around four minutes this weekend, but I'm not going to wear Dragonflies. I'm going to wear the Matumbos.
Now, why? What makes you want to wear the Matumbos and not the Dragonfly?
Mostly because I ran the 1500 like a few weeks ago, and training's going well, and I just want to see my progression, and I don't really want the shoe to sort of filter into that. So,
but the shoe's not filtering. We've already discussed that.
I'll get people messaging me like, "Oh, nice run, mate. Oh yeah, you wore the Dragonflies." I'm like, oh, "Shut up." I don't know. I think I'll do that, but I reckon on this Saturday I'm thinking of doing a 3K half an hour after the 15, and I'll whack on the Dragonflies for that.
Very nice.
So I think I'll mix it up. It'll be quite interesting. It'll be a fun experiment. I'll go Matumbo 1500, Dragonflies 3K straight after each other. Get a bit of a feel for differences. I reckon straight after one another.
Well, you're in good shape, so I'm expecting everyone to follow that one up as well, because I think you'll be well and truly under 4 minutes, I would assume.
No, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
But and what about you, Julian? Back into running?
So I'm just ticking along. I do like 30-minute runs every second day. I'm wearing a Stinson ATR at the moment, and I'm looking to get out of that as quick as I can. So I need something. Maybe you guys can help me. I need something rigid, deep enough to fit my little new device in there. I need it to be pretty soft as well, like cushioned. I need, they're the things.
Is the device like inverting you a little bit? A little bit.
Yeah. And I need I like a lower drop shoe as well.
Yeah, okay.
Surely you'll just wear the New Balance more.
That is exactly the shoe that I'm wearing today, because I need to decide whether I buy a new one or not. That's good by you, Tom. You can work in my store one day.
Oh, waiting for you to come. Thanks, man. Waiting for that.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this month, like we got a lot of Dragonflies, Adelaide Harriers from the running company in Adelaide and Ballarat as well. And I reckon working in that industry, seeing their happiness when they open up a box of shoes that they've spent their hard earned on, and knowing that they're going to improve themselves in the shoe, it's a relatively rewarding profession to be in, to be honest. Like, we don't get that feeling as much probably maybe we do in podiatry, but I reckon selling a pair of, there's nothing, every time you get a new pair of shoes, if it's even within 1 week of each other, it's just still a really good feeling when you open up a box of shoes, you put them on until you hate the shoe or like the shoe, but the instant moment when you get the shoe, it's hard to match.
I love that, because as we've gone online, we're accessing some customers that are outside that sort of running community, and you can definitely tell when the passion isn't quite there in terms of how they communicate to us. where you can tell someone who's in the running community and who isn't actually. Yeah.
Well, you wait till they return their shoe half done, asking for a repair because a bit of the stitching's come undone.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well. Yep. You're not going to be able to get another one. Like, these are done. It's tough, though. Like, someone who buys one online for size and goes, oh, yeah, no, I got it. A few weeks later, they say, yeah, I meant to call you. I can't. Can I change this for a 10? You're like, sorry. Nah. Yeah.
All right. Well, you boys have a good month. Good episode.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks, Nidda. Tommy.
You too. Okay.
See you later.
Bye. Doesn't matter.